As our region digs out from Sandy, the economic impact of the disaster remains unclear, but it's likely to cause major financial distortions. The New York Stock Exchange remains closed, although it will be opening tomorrow, and pre-storm estimates put the cost of rebuilding at $88 billion. Here to help us sort out the likely cost of the storm is NPR's Adam Davidson, co-founder of NPR's Planet Money and also New York Times Magazine economic columnist. Welcome back to our show.
Thanks so much, Lenny.
How is the economy in the area worse hit by Sandy faring before the storm struck?
Well, the New York economy has been doing better, considerably better than the nation on average, but that's, you know, that's part of the inequality story. That's been a benefit that's accrued to, you know, finance, Wall Street, and not so much to the rest of us. Although unemployment overall is lower in New York, so that's good.
Now, based on past experience, are there estimates about how much the economy might slow down following this kind of storm? Or should we note what the Washington Post said, that one thing that makes the damage from Sandy hard to predict is that much of its damage is without precedent?
Yeah, there's already today lots of emails going around from economists and economic consultancies trying to tote up the damage, but every one of them will admit it's a really rough estimate, although it's an estimate that can be informed a bit. You know, we look at Hurricane Irene and the impact of that. Hurricane Katrina, you know, that's such a one-off and so much more damaging, at least to that region, that it seems that doesn't seem like the right comparison. So the numbers I'm looking at do seem to converge, although I'll note that I covered Katrina and the initial estimates were way low for Katrina. But again, I don't know how much that applies. So the initial estimates are something in the range of $10 billion in insurable losses, meaning losses, obviously, that insurance companies will cover, and another $10 billion or so in uninsurable losses. So people who didn't have insurance and are just going to have to pay for it. So that's $20 billion. Some say $15 billion, but I'm struck by how similar all the estimates are. And then another $30 billion in second order damages. So, you know, Manhattan is home to some of the most expensive restaurants in the world. You know, lots of Broadway shows, lots of financial activity that just isn't going to happen. And so the cost of all of that around the region, it's adding up somewhere in the order of $40 billion. Sounds like a huge amount of money, but the region that Sandy went through has something like a $3 trillion economy annually, meaning it's about a fifth the size of the overall U.S. economy. So I can't do the math too quickly in my head, but so you're talking about, say, 1% taken away. Am I right? I think so. 1%.
You're better at math than I am.
Yeah. So you know, that means that the region as a whole will have a 1% worse economy this year, something like that, maybe a little bit less than that.
Well, there will be a large influx of reconstruction money. Won't that stimulate the economy? Isn't that what also happens after a disaster?
This is probably the most hotly debated issue in economics and can get literally screaming matches started among economists. So, yes, there is a view, especially during an economic slowdown precisely like the one we have now, that this can be stimulative and have a long-term effect. For other reasons, the other week I was looking at the unemployment in the New Orleans area and noticed that for the many years after Katrina, it was considerably lower than the rest of the country and the rest of Louisiana. And that seems to largely be the result of construction jobs pouring in at a time when there were no construction jobs around the country. It also, a side effect was, you know, many very difficult to employ people left the state. So that actually, you know, might not be a good thing, but it helped the unemployment rate.
Although New Orleans has never fully recovered, we hope that we wish it had, and we definitely want this area to recover.
I keep bringing it up, but this is not a good comparison. The thing is, for it to be stimulative, it would have to be new money, I mean, money borrowed to pay for this reconstruction, and that's the question. So if someone is fixing their porch, but they're using money that they would have spent on a big screen TV or a big night out for dinner or something like that, then it's not actually stimulative money. It's just, money taken from one area and put into another area. And also insurance money, I mean, it feels tempting to think of it as just free money that comes in from nowhere. But, of course, that money is redirected from, the premiums that people pay and the like. So this is very hotly debated, but I wouldn't expect a huge stimulative effect. Although in local area, I mean, if you're a construction worker and you can, there's a good chance you're going to be spending a lot of time on the New Jersey coast in the coming months.
Well, I'm curious about how those impact estimates are calculated. Actually, I did the math differently than you. You said 10 million insured, 10 million uninsured, and then a billion, and then 30 billion more. That's $50 billion. I've also read estimates of as high as 88 billion. How are these things even calculated?
I mean, today, it really is as back of the envelope as it gets. People have, they look at past disasters. They take, they add up very, very rough estimates of what the infrastructure damage might be. They look at major industries, major businesses in the area. So, for example, we have some refining capacity, obviously, in New Jersey, and you can see right away that that's one big ticket item in the area. There was two refineries were taken offline completely. Four were reduced, so we're told that's like over 1 million barrels a day of production taken offline. That's not nothing, and for the Northeast, that's not that it's significant nationally, but not that significant. But it's pretty significant locally. So you look at those big ticket items, and then you just. It's really back of the envelope. I mean, it'll be years before we know for sure.
Adam Davidson is with us. The markets remain closed today, but plan to reopen tomorrow. Should we anticipate a dip in the Dow Jones Industrial Average?
I think we should definitely anticipate a lot of volatility in the morning. So we've had 2 days where investors all over the world want to, they think that there's an opportunity to make or lose money, to make money by selling. Apple made big announcements yesterday, so some people think, oh, I want to buy some Apple stock. Other people think, oh, it was a terrible decision. They fired some of their best people. I want to sell my Apple stock. Other people probably want to buy Home Depot because they imagine, oh, everyone's going to be going to Home Depot and buying stuff to fix their houses. Maybe they want to sell insurance company stock, and they haven't had that opportunity. And so you have all these investors all over the world chomping at the bit, and they're going to have to wait until tomorrow morning and cram 2 days of trading into those first few minutes.
Well, so I keep on thinking about the pros and cons, not that there's anything positive about this experience, but New York Harbor is one of the country's biggest shipping hubs, and the disruptions could cause a major ripple throughout the economy. Thousands of flights have been canceled. I'm sure that is going to lose the airlines already in trouble a lot of money. On the other hand, if I owned a supermarket, I probably would be thrilled that the place was cleaned out the other by today.
Well, you're thinking exactly like an economist. You're thinking there are pros and cons, and there are winners and losers.
And then there's infrastructure. Infrastructure, because mass transit remains shut down in New York. Some reports have said that train tracks in New Jersey have been washed away. So there's going to have to be an awful lot of rebuilding of the infrastructure, despite all the debate over it during this presidential campaign.
Right. And a lot of the long-term effect of that will come down to how does the federal government handle this? Does the federal government support the states, or do the states need to allocate that money from spending they would have spent elsewhere? So does that mean, laid off teachers or, diminishing pension funds or something like that to pay for that infrastructure? Does the federal government pay for it out of new borrowing, or do they pay for it out of by cutting other federal programs or by raising taxes. Those are the kind of things that would determine whether this has a stimulative effect or if it's just pain diverted from somewhere else to pay for infrastructure here. But you're exactly right to do the math in your head. I'd say there's no question there is a loss of value, but there may be, GDP is a measure of economic activity, not of value. So a house sitting there isn't creating or losing GDP, but weirdly enough, perversely enough, when you destroy that house and then rebuild it, even though you're left in a value sense at the same place you were before the storm, you've added to GDP, you might have added to employment, at least temporarily, and so you might see that spike, you might see that little peak in GDP and a little dip in employment, but whether that actually means we're better off is a harder argument to make.
Now, last week you wrote in the New York Times that now that the campaign is almost over, it's clear that this presidential cycle was all about the economy. Do you think the economic impacts of this storm will affect the election?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the direct economic impact is probably will not be felt by next Tuesday. I mean, I think, I'm just playing games here right now, but I mean, you could imagine by a month from now, even 2 or 3 weeks from now, construction workers in Pennsylvania and Ohio have been feeling really depressed, finding themselves getting employed and maybe feeling more optimistic. Obviously, the way the government responds to this crisis will be, a big, since in many ways this is a referendum on how people think about the government's role in an economy. But you are, in this week, I think you're really purely getting into psychology. But that's not nothing. I mean, after 9/11, when 9/11, the direct economic impacts were fairly minimal, but we did go into a rather painful, though short, recession, and in large part because of psychological effects. I mean, psychological effects, at the end of the day, an economy is the mood of the people. And so I was talking to someone on Wall Street today and who was saying 2 days of trading, losing 2 days of trading, not that big a deal. Some people will lose money. Some people will forego the opportunity to lose money. Some people would have made some dumb decisions today. So maybe, it's not that big a deal, losing 2 days of trading. But what is a big deal is people feeling confident that our financial system fundamentally works. And so that's why it's really important to get trading open tomorrow and to really convey this feeling that we know what we're doing on Wall Street. We know how to run a financial system. And that's the kind of thing that could be shaken, when you have like a Katrina response, a very negative, bad response, you that psychological impact can actually add up to far, far bigger than the direct physical damage. I'm not saying that's happening here now. It's way too early to know, and my hunch is it won't happen.
Well, we'll have you back, Adam. We'll see how the whole thing plays out. But thank you so much for talking with us today. Adam Davidson is co-founder of NPR's Planet Money and the economic columnist for the New York Times magazine. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Great. All right. Thank you so much.